From the National Humanities Center, this is Wayne Pond with Soundings, conversations featuring scholars and visitors at the National Humanities Center.
If we see law as, for example, a set of rules of the game, which we have to follow in order to carry out our own ends and aims, where those ends and aims are really largely individually directed,
yep,
then the motivation for following those rules is going to be individually motivated as well. There's no reason to believe that's going to make us any better persons. In fact, the law is likely to be fairly inefficient, even in governing our behavior, because we're going to try to see as much as we can how to get around those laws.
Welcome to Soundings. Law, community, and political conflict. Those are the topics this week on Soundings. My guest is Gerald Postuma, a professor of philosophy at the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. During a recent fellowship year at the National Humanities Center, Gerald Postuma worked on a forthcoming book about law, community, and conflict. Gerald Postuma approaches these issues from historical as well as contemporary standpoints, stressing the relationship of law and community in concrete social circumstances as a response to both collective and individual problems. Jerry Postuma, you're at the Humanities Center writing about the relationship between political conflict and the law. We'll get to some definitions of terms in just a moment. Let me begin by asking you this. Why is it important that we have some fresh insight into a topic like that?
Well, let me say what I mean by political conflict. There are various kinds. First of all, conflict over the distribution of resources or opportunities or privileges in society.
Mm-hmm.
Conflict over the limits of individual liberty and where an individual can infringe on other people's privileges and concerns. And conflict over the shape our common life should take, what we might call it conflict over the common good. Now, these conflicts can be pursued either by individuals, as it were, an individual determining what he can get out of it or she can get out of it,
right,
or from the point of view of the community as a whole.
Mm-hmm.
But in either case, there's likely to be dispute, conflict, dissensus, disagreement about what the various forms of political good should take.
Are we talking, Jerry Postuma, about partisan issues? I assume that we could be talking about that, but we're not necessarily talking about the Republicans and the Democrats.
No. In fact, these kinds of conflicts can happen within political parties as
uh-huh.
well as outside of them. In fact, often the most heated such conflicts are within such parties.
Uh-huh.
But parties tend to congeal around general approaches to such problems, and so sometimes these will be partisan
uh-huh.
in the standard sense of partisan politics, and oftentimes they are not
uh-huh.
and can transcend party politics and yet be important conflicts within the community itself.
Mm-hmm. Let's fasten on that word community for just a moment, Jerry Postuma. Tell me about how that term, that concept, if not the reality of our everyday lives mm-hmm. as, you know, participants in various communities, how that, in your project here, how that connects to the notion of political conflict. You mentioned the distribution
yeah.
of privileges, justice, things like
yeah.
that.
Well, community is a notion that has as many definitions as political views, as there are political views. In this case, the problem comes in how these various conflicts over distribution and like are to be approached.
Mm-hmm.
These conflicts can be destructive of community and what binds us together, and in many cases these conflicts can actually bring us together in some ways. A lot depends on how we as a group approach these questions.
Uh-huh.
As I said, if they're approached in terms of each person attempting to get what he can or she can out of the arrangement, then the kind of conflict is going to be very different from an approach in which community members regard these as issues for them to resolve together as members of a community.
Uh-huh.
So oftentimes the way in which we view community as an aggregate of individuals on the one hand, or as a kind of unified whole about which, within which, however, there can be disagreements, will make a big difference about how these conflicts are approached.
Mm-hmm. Let me ask you to, I'll appeal to you to talk historically. Mm-hmm. Can you give me, for example, an item in what, recent or, you know, the take it back as far as you want mm-hmm. in American history, where, you know, in the bicentennial season right now, what comes to mind?
Well, there is now, especially in the last year or two, going and then going all the way back to near the founding of our nation, a debate about judicial review mm-hmm. in constitutional law. Mm-hmm. That is, the extent to which judges, going up to the Supreme Court, have the power and authority to review and throw out mm-hmm. Legislation, duly authorized legislation. Here is a context, a legal context now, where issues about distribution, about the common good, about extent of liberty come to bear. And the recent debate and the debate going back to the founding of our nation had to do with the extent to which we are going to allow judges to resolve such issues or mm-hmm. get involved in the temporary resolution of them.
Well, if they don't resolve them, who's going to do it? Are we appealing, you know, beyond where do we go for our answers if we don't put our faith and trust in the judicial system?
Yeah. Well, the question is how far do we wish the judicial system or the legislative process mm-hmm. to settle finally these issues? Mm-hmm. One of the kind of concerns I have is that has to do with the way in which we look at law as both a context for and a solution to the kind of political conflicts I mentioned at the beginning. Now, it has been for a long time a standard view about the nature of law that law is the place, the entity we turn to solve or settle these political conflicts.
And it's not?
And it often is not. In fact, the law tends to be more a generator of conflict than a settler of it. Mm-hmm. So if we took law to be its success to be in solving or settling conflicts, it's oftentimes does just the opposite, and so is unsatisfactory uh-huh. for that reason.
Are we talking, Jerry Postuma, about a disparity here between absolute views of the law and relative views of the law? That is to say, I'll adopt the law, I'll uphold it, I'll observe it as long as it's consistent with what mm-hmm. I'm thinking. But when it doesn't, when it's not that way, then I'm going to criticize it. Yeah. I'll become a relativist mm-hmm. and get as many people in the community as I can to gang up on it. Am I over?
Well, I'm not so sure it's relativism versus absolutism, but there is a question about the extent to which the statement of the law, either in statutory form, uh-huh. form of statutes or judicial decisions or judicial constitutional decisions, the extent to which that settles the matter of what I called political conflict earlier.
Mm-hmm. You mean once and forever?
Well, once and forever, yes. So that's such that we say, well, no longer shall that be a matter of concern or focus for our interest or debate uh-huh. after that. Now, my view is that there has been a long-standing tradition, a view about the nature of law, such that law was understood in the words of the 18th century philosopher Hume, the task or function of law was to cut off all occasions of discord. Mm-hmm. Now, my view is that that's an unfortunate and not very accurate view about the way the law works. It's not accurate because, as I mentioned a minute ago, law tends to generate as many conflicts as it settles. Mm-hmm. Another, and it's unfortunate, it seems to me, because sometimes what we need is not to put aside conflict or stop it, but to provide a context or a focus within which this conflict or debate can be carried on fruitfully in a way that engages us, raises the fundamental issues, and brings us towards, as it were, settlement as opposed to a cutting off or a stopping of the mm-hmm. Conflict. And in this way, if you take these concerns seriously, we're led to a view about the nature of law, which is very different from what I call the standard one. Law doesn't cut off conflict. Rather, it provides a kind of matrix for debate or discussion, a kind of language within which the discussion and debate about political issues can be carried on, as it were, in a civilized and hopefully constructive fashion.
You're telling me, Jerry Postuma, that your aim here in describing the relationship between political conflict and the law is for communities, sort of to step back a little bit and not look at the law as some final arbiter, but assume the best about themselves individually and collectively and say, this isn't going to be the final answer. And again, you use the word matrix. You're establishing a sort of back and forth talk about the law. All right, now that sounds wonderful. You know, we're making some high assumptions about human nature there. But what happens when we have absolute questions of good and evil, of moral behavior, murder, and things like that, and we say, we can't tolerate this. Mm-hmm. And then 50 years later, somebody comes down the pike and says, oh, that's not so bad, we can rewrite the law. Aren't we sort of being disrespectful to the people who went before us if that becomes the case?
Well, there is a question of how we should relate to the what I would like to call the provisional settlements or consensus around such issues that develops through history. If we take one picture, a picture which is emerging again as very strong amongst some commentators on constitutional law, say Ed Meese, Attorney General Edwin Meese.
Now, he would be more of the absolutist.
Yes, but in this respect, he would regard the decisions and resolutions at a certain point in our history, that the decisions and resolutions in the intentions of the framers of our Constitution to be the authoritative determiner of all the issues of political conflict that I mentioned.
There's that cutoff.
There you cut it off.
Yeah.
Now, the question one might raise then is why we should treat their decisions, their resolutions, as normative, as determining for us now.
Mm-hmm. Well, why can't we do that? If for example, maybe I'm inviting you to comment on a bad analogy, Jerry Postuma, but if we do it in religion, if we say we have the Ten Commandments, you can name your dicta, you know, the coda that you want to follow. If it isn't possible in those terms, I mean, if it is possible in those terms, why shouldn't it be possible in legal terms?
Well, there's one obvious disanalogy there, and that is when we're thinking within theological and religious context, there is an assumption about the transcendent wisdom and goodness of the giver of the of the Ten Commandments or the source. Yes, and of course we have no such reason to believe that those founding fathers had any such transcendent goodness or wisdom either. So what we're talking about is an attempt to fix or settle issues once and for all.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, the question, there are reasons for taking that seriously. One might want to say, for example, we all agreed to it.
Yeah.
Right? It's a kind of contract, a kind of implicit contract.
Yeah, but 20,000 Frenchmen can be wrong.
They can be wrong.
It doesn't make
But even if we agreed, you see, if it were true that we all agreed to this, then we could be held to it, even if in some sense it was going in the wrong track. We might have some obligation to be faithful to this agreement in virtue of the very agreement, even though it's not quite on the right track.
Uh-huh.
But of course the question is, have we ever agreed? Is there such a contract around? And that's pretty dubious proposition, one might think.
Your inquiry goes to the help me with this, Jerry Postuma. It seems to me that this inquiry, that your proposition that you've got on the table, goes to the notion that we like to think that we live in a nation of law and not of men. Or I guess it would be proper today to say men and women, people. Mm-hmm. And yet when we say we live in a nation of law, what we're trying to figure out is where is the source of the wisdom and the authority in that law? Mm-hmm. And we got a circular thing going here. We have to come back to ourselves.
That's right. Yes. One of the strengths, or one of the most attractive appeals of this notion of being a nation of law and not of men and women, is that it seems to bring the question of how we should behave in society out of the realm of debate and conflict. One of the problems is that the appeal to the notion of being a nation of laws as opposed to men or men and women,
right,
is that it takes as the focus of it a kind of neutrality.
Uh-huh.
One of the attractions then is we can abstract from the conflict that divides us,
mm-hmm,
and appeal to some kind of neutral standard.
Yeah, and this neutrality is an illusion.
But the neutrality is an illusion,
yeah,
then. This
sounds pretty hopeless, Jerry Postum. It sounds like we're really having a tough time figuring out who it is that we get our legal answers from.
Well, we get our legal answers from my own view would be, we get our legal answers. We get our answers for how we should relate to each other in a community in the context of the debate about law.
I see.
But it's we together as a community debating about these matters, not having them settled either by the intentions of our founding fathers 200 years ago,
right,
nor by some trained elite,
uh-huh,
either legal or judicial, but by seeing those all as a part of a larger political process,
uh-huh,
in which we as participants in this community, as members and citizens in this community, participate in resolving these issues. What law does for us is it focuses the kind of dispute and debate in a certain fashion and form.
Gives it a language.
Gives it a language. That's the important part of it.
Yeah.
And we must keep in mind, it seems to me, that the kind of issues about how we should distribute resources,
mm-hmm,
and opportunities, what kind of access to the goods that are the common product of our working together,
right,
what kind of access we should have to that, what kind of ideals we should be committed to as a community, what the common good means,
mm-hmm,
those are issues that can't be settled, as it were, once and for all time, because the stakes are so very high.
Yeah, and people change
and
circumstances.
And people change, and our views of our natural environment and our social environment change, and we need to have the kind of, as it were, flexibility on the one,
right,
hand, and we need to have the engagement and involvement of each generation as they overlap in the settling and the resettling and the revising of these, mm-hmm, concerns.
The program is Soundings. This is Wayne Pond at the National Humanities Center. You're listening to a discussion about law, community, and political conflict. My guest is Gerald Postuma of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. During a recent fellowship year at the National Humanities Center, Gerald Postuma worked on a forthcoming book entitled Law, Community, and Conflict.
Jerry Postuma, you are coming dangerously close here to sounding like a high school civics teacher. I hear one of the words that we could put on the table would be citizenship.
Oh, indeed.
The responsibility of citizenship. My eyes glaze over. I'm bored. I want to make a living. I want to watch TV at night. I'm not interested in this stuff. You are a philosopher, and you're dealing with legal issues here. How would you take this case for the responsibilities of citizenship to, I take it that you're writing not just for a specialized, mm-hmm, audience, but in some fashion trying to reach the larger, yeah, social fabric?
Well, there is something quite right in your bringing this round to an idea of citizenship, or an ideal of citizenship.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things that has concerned me for some time, and it concerns me about the way in which some prevailing notions of law lead us to think about how we live in a society, is that both law and other institutions, business and economic institutions and the like, encourage us to think more and more about what we can get out of things, but not what role we can play in the shaping and fashioning of our own community.
In other words, what we're forgetting here, we put the emphasis on the enlightened self-interest, and we tend to forget where that's going to lead.
Yeah. Well, that's right. You see, it's not just that we should not be so selfish,
yeah,
and look for the good of the community, though it seems to me that's an important thing.
Uh-huh.
But it seems to me that the stakes are higher than that in some way for each of us, because if we don't get engaged in working out together these issues as an act of public citizenry, these things are going to be resolved for us.
Yeah.
And they're going to be resolved in ways that are not going to be in our interests.
That we may not like.
There are lots of things that there are powers, economic and political powers, which will shape these things for us if we aren't engaged in them themselves. Furthermore, it seems to me, it's a theme that goes way back to Aristotle and the ancients, but there's an important feature of, as it were, our own good and our own self-fulfillment in engaging together in settling of common public issues. Mm-hmm. So we have two things. One, we're going to, these things are going to be settled one way or the other, and who knows how they're going to be settled unless we're involved in them. Mm-hmm. And secondly, there's something self-fulfilling and developing if we can engage in these issues together.
Now, I don't want to take you too far off the track, Jerry Postuma, but you have made a solid case here for, as you said, if not the idea, then the ideal of citizenship. Where do we look for what? Some concrete leadership here? Now, I'm not asking you to talk about our present political leaders. I'm thinking more in terms of what? Institutions like education, the family. You know, Emerson has this wonderful notion of self-reliance. All, you know, all we got to do is look inside of ourselves and we'll find answers to questions like this that you were describing. How would you comment on that?
Well, I think if we may go back to the focus of my study, which is law again, mm-hmm. law does provide, law and the history of our society and the community that we've shaped provides a focus for our concern, mm-hmm. for our working out of these issues.
So we should all become lawyers? What?
Well, no, we should all become much more aware of the kinds of issues law typically tries to deal with. Uh-huh. We shouldn't become lawyers necessarily, though it seems to me we should become much more aware of the ways in which law, as a matter of fact, shapes our lives. One of the things that we all work with a rather simplified notion of law, which we identify either with the policeman stopping us for a traffic ticket, or we see it coming around in April every year with taxes.
Lord.
So law makes us do things we would rather not do and would like to get away with, though we see, if we're at all reflective about it, that we need taxes, mm-hmm. To pay for things that we together want and individually want, and we need rules for the road in order to make it safe. So, mm-hmm. and yet law is in some ways a kind of nasty superego, a parent that we'd rather not have around.
Some other that we don't want really
yes,
want to face.
But law, of course, does a whole lot more for us and is engaged in our lives a whole lot more. It shapes the... it affects the kind of products we eat, regulates and governs them. It makes it possible for us to set up a family and organize our lives, to marry, to give gifts, to receive mm-hmm. gifts. It allows us to hold property and to give property, to do something with it. So the law not only stops us from doing things, it provides ways of making things possible for us to do, to carry out our aims. It also helps us, and this is the part that I keep coming back to, it also provides a focus for us thinking together about what our common aims and goals should be. Two examples might be helpful here. One is, how should we deal with those parts of our history of which there's still some kind of remainder left? Our historical or cultural heritage, architectural in character, or other sorts of things. How do we approach that? Well, the question is not just a matter of where are you going to stop, where are you going to redirect traffic, and that kind of thing. It has to do with the importance and value of those things for our sense of ourselves, and law helps us to focus that question. Another area is our natural environment, if you will, our natural heritage. Again, the question is, how should we approach that? Should it be regarded simply as a matter of a resource to be exploited now, mm-hmm. For the highest bidder?
Right.
Or is it something we should hold for the future? If it's something, I suspect we would take the latter. If it's something that we should hold for the future, what of it should we keep?
Mm-hmm.
To answer that question is to answer some deep questions about what we value, why we value it, what we should preserve, what the future generations are going to find valuable, and that's not going to be a matter just of whether they're going to be able to succeed and live on some material basis.
Right.
It has to do with, if you will, their spiritual or cultural values and the way they see their lives.
You're telling me, Jerry Postuma, that the law, in one sense, is an excellent thing in our lives because it makes us think in terms of what went before us, and it obligates us to think about what is down the road. Let's talk about the moment that we live in now in our relationship, in this relationship between community and political conflict and the law. I know that you philosophers are, jumping around words like motive and causality and all of that. Does the law help to make us better people because we have the law? That may be an obvious question, but help me with that.
Well, not necessarily.
Yeah.
Not by any means necessarily. Thomas Aquinas, the medieval theologian, was also one of the most profound thinkers about the nature of law. He did believe that law would make us better because law makes us, as it were, do things. And by doing them over and over, we sort of get in the habit, and sooner or later we become better persons. A lot depends not on law conceived as rules, mm-hmm. but the way we approach the law as, again, I mean, my whole concern here is how we understand the law, the kind of framework within which we approach the law.
Mm-hmm.
And if we see law as, for example, a set of rules of the game, which we have to follow in order to carry out our own ends and aims, where those ends and aims are really largely individually directed,
yep.
then the motivation for following those rules is going to be individually motivated as well. There's no reason to believe that's going to make us any better persons. In fact, the law is likely to be fairly inefficient, even in governing our behavior, because we're going to try to see as much as we can how to get around those laws.
Because it doesn't have a social echo.
It doesn't have any kind of depth to it.
Yeah.
It's seen just as the formal restraints we have to commit ourselves to in order to get on with the other stuff that we really want to do,
yeah.
which is meeting our own needs, our own aims and ends. However, if you look at law in a slightly different way, as the focus for our concern, our debate, our disagreement about matters that things that matter to us all,
mm-hmm.
Although it may not make us better persons, it'll at least get us thinking about the kind of issues that can bring us together, at least.
Gerald Postuma is a professor of philosophy at the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. During a recent fellowship year at the National Humanities Center, Gerald Postuma worked on a forthcoming book about law, community, and political conflict. The program is Soundings. This is Wayne Pond at the National Humanities Center. For a cassette copy of Soundings on Law, Community, and Conflict, send $3 to the National Humanities Center, Research Triangle Park, North Carolina, 27709. Soundings would like to hear from you. The address again is the National Humanities Center, Research Triangle Park, North Carolina, 27709. Next week on Soundings, the topics will be Byzantine art and early church history. My guests will be Robert Nelson of the University of Chicago and Raymond Van Dam of the University of Texas. Until next week, this is Wayne Pond at the National Humanities Center. Support for Soundings comes from the National Endowment for the Humanities.
Listen to Soundings. This is Kim Nielsen at the National Humanities Center, inviting you to join Wayne Pond this week for a discussion about law, community, and political conflict. Wayne's guest is Gerald Postuma of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. The relationship of law to social communities as a response to both collective as well as individual problems. Some answers and insights this week on Soundings from the National Humanities Center on this station.